Well, from the listed space, we head into the primarily unlisted space in this final Dealmakers panel for the week. And Bain's 2016 private equity report actually makes for illuminating reading if you want a high-level overview of what's happening to the global PE sector. Hugh MacArthur, which he's Bain's head of global private equity, reckons that the asset class managed to stage something of a surprise rally in the face of what he called insurmountable odds post the heavy gearing and heady days of the financial crisis. He acknowledges that the refinancing of debt and all of this re-engineering of capital structure has really been largely thanks to the Fed and the ECB keeping this easy money going. The taps haven't been turned off. But GP still managed to quite ruthlessly exploit the space, so much so that by last year, LPs relished in a fifth consecutive year when distributions outpaced capital calls, and they responded in kind, substantially upping their allocations to the asset class. And it's no wonder everyone's talking about private equity at the moment. But how is this theme playing itself out in South and Sub-Saharan Africa, if at all? Well, to find out, it's a great pleasure to welcome tonight's panelists, Erica Fundamava, Chief Executive of the South African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association. Erica, good to speak to you again.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for the opportunity.
Also on the line, we have Paul Moketi. He's a principal responsible for investment execution and management at a South African-based GP, Medu Capital. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Michael. Thanks for having me.
And John Bellew rounds off our trio tonight, head of private equity at Bowman Gilfillan and real private equity law doyen in South Africa. Great to chat to you again, John.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Now, Erica, kick us off tonight. I think globally, according to the most recent data, private equity's 10-year returns to large public pension funds outpaced the S&P 500 by 3.7% net of fees, and that's some going. We see a lot of the legacy effects of the financial crisis are sort of retreating into the past, and it looks like private equity should consistently perform at a level close to or at least above public equities over 1, 3, and 5-year time horizons. That's globally. What are we seeing here in South Africa?
Michael, we're seeing a similar story in the South African and the Southern African markets. And for instance, if you look at the numbers released by us not too long ago, prepared by Risk Europe for the 10 years to December 2015, you saw the South African private equity industry delivering 18.5% internal rate of return. That's that's around about 400 basis points higher than the listed market. Look, the margin isn't always quite as attractive as that. It does vary over time, but it may vary between 100 to 300, 400 basis points. So certainly an outperformance at this stage, and we have good reason to expect that an outperformance will continue in coming years.
Well, those are some seriously impressive numbers. John, when you look at the big theme driving private equity from a deal-making perspective, firstly, and then we'll chat about fundraising, but what are the big themes driving deal-making in particular in South Africa and then Sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, I think in South Africa we are still probably not seeing as many deals as we would expect given the amount of capital that's been raised over the last few years. Having said that, I think there is more activity in the market now than there has been for a while. Whether it's theme-driven or not in the South African market, I think, is difficult to say. I mean, you know, you were referring to the Bain report, and one of the things that is stressed in there is that private equity houses need to identify their strengths and then play to their strengths, which and invest behind their investment themes. I think in the South African context, and I think it may be quite similar in the rest of Sub-Saharan Africa as well, there have been a number of sectors which have been favored over the last few years. I think the theme of the rising African middle class and the growth in consumer spending has driven a lot of investment in the FMCG space. Financial services has been a consistent theme, and we're seeing that definitely in Sub-Saharan Africa at the moment with dedicated funds being raised. Agriculture and food, And then outside of South Africa, quite a lot of healthcare and quite a lot of education as well. Private education is a big thing.
And, well, you say outside of South Africa, but there, I think it was Mete also concluded one or two interesting deals in the education space. So there's some activity in that space here as well, I think. As we know, the South African government is struggling to deliver a quality public education to the masses. Paul, firstly, tell us a little bit more about Medu Capital, and then we'll have a look at what the big themes are that are on your radar at the moment.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for the opportunity. Medu Capital is a private equity fund that was formed in 2003. So we've been around for over 13 years now. We focus on the mid-market space. We certainly do not focus on large buyouts that are reliant on debt or financial leverage to generate returns. So we are very much growth-driven. We've raised three funds to date. In 2003, we raised Medu Fund 1, which was invested in six companies and three more follow-on investments for 300 million rand. That fund is now fully realized. In 2007, we raised a Fund 2 vehicle, which was a 900 million rand fund, invested in eight companies, three of which have been realized and five of which are currently being managed. And in 2013, we raised our third fund for 1.2 billion rand, still focusing on the mid-market sector. And currently, we've invested in four companies, which are currently being managed. And that fund is currently less than 50% invested, so we still have significant capital to deploy in the South African mid-market space.
Well, thanks for that. And you are 100% black-owned fund, so you can tap into the BEE side of deal structuring as well, as we see the revised codes have come out.
That's correct. I mean, if you look at our fund, you're absolutely correct. Although we don't see ourselves as a BEE investor, but rather as a commercial private equity investor, BEE does generate a lot of deal flow activity for us. Because when we come and invest, we not bring along commercial expertise, but we also bring the BEE credentials to the table, which I guess for most entrepreneurs it's quite an appealing factor to have when you come to the table with capital and with commercial expertise plus BEE as a bonus.
Yeah, it is a bonus. It's a real icing on the top there. Now, what are some of the themes that Medu Capital is gearing into at the moment?
We recently concluded two transactions, Michael. One concluded at the end of January in the company called Elite Truck Hire, which is a truck hire business that supplies into three market segments. One is the truck rental business, which is largely full maintenance leasing. What we like about that business is its stickiness in this type of economic environment. When, you know, the economy is under pressure, everyone is looking to cut, but that business does give you strong cash flows, it gives you sticky earnings, and it gives you high margins in this type of environment. The second element to that business is long-distance haulage, which is very much dependent on the GDP performance. And the third segment is the forklift rental, which, as you know, if you've got a warehouse and you've got goods to deliver and you're renting trucks, you're most likely going to need forklifts in your warehouse. And so that's quite a nice complementary business there. The second one, which we concluded in February this year, was in a company called Universal Paints, which, I mean, you talk about, and I think John touched on it earlier, on what generates deal activity. I mean, we have seen in the recent past that, you know, the decline in currency has sort of generated deal flow activity for us because a lot of entrepreneurs are seeking to take money out of the country and probably park some of it offshore. And as a result, it generates in our mid-market space deal flow activity. So we bought that business from an entrepreneur that started the business 32 years ago, and it was very much a family-owned business. And the entrepreneur had reached sort of retirement age and was looking to exit his business. And I guess we offered him a solution to realize his equity.
Well, that is quite interesting to note about the weak currency. John, just to go back to you quickly, do you also think that perhaps the weak currency might present opportunities for import substitution to be driving a potential stream of deal activity?
Yeah, I think there is an opportunity for local entrepreneurs to, you know, get into the import substitution space and, you know, for private equity to back them. I'm not sure that we've seen a lot of that coming through as yet. I do agree that there is definitely a replacement capital opportunity for people looking to perhaps de-risk their personal balance sheets and sell some of their shares in local companies and invest that money elsewhere.
Yeah, that is an unfortunate side effect of where we are in the South African economy, rather depressing that. Erica, let's look up north for a little while. And looking at deal activity in Africa, as we at Dealmakers Catalyst have tracked for the first quarter, 19 deals in the first quarter. It compares quite favorably with the 11 that we tracked in the first quarter of 2015. And there's an important caveat. We know it's hard to track every single transaction. The asset class is inherently private, but it does seem to indicate, allowing for a margin of error, that activity in Africa is on the rise.
I agree with you, Michael, and that's also what we're seeing amongst our members who are doing deals across the African continent. So you're seeing activity in West and East Africa as your data tracker has picked up. So whether that's in Kenya or Ethiopia, where that market truly is opening up, the government there is very much open to the idea of doing deals in particular sectors, so whether that's pharmaceuticals or certain consumer goods or consumer beverages, across also on the western side of the continent, whether it's Nigeria, Ghana, and these assets could also include power deals, energy deals, a couple of which we've seen.
John, when we look at this, we've also got the declining commodity cycle, and China's really behind that. But does this mean we've also got companies that might be finding it slightly more difficult to tap those credit lines at banks and increasingly difficult to obtain traditional finance and therefore are turning to private equity as a result?
I'm not so sure. I mean, I think the effect of the commodity crisis is that certain markets have become much more difficult to do transactions in, and I think probably Angola and Nigeria in Africa are the two best examples of that. Also Nigeria's failure to manage their currency properly, I think, has put many private equity houses off doing deals in that market. I think part of the reason why East Africa is on the rise is because, you know, oddly enough, they don't have the resources boom and their economies are diversified in other ways. So I think it's not so much commodities per se. I think you need to look at it on a per market basis, and you need to look at it almost on a per industry and a per sector basis. And even in tough times, there will be sectors of the economy or companies within an economy that do well. And, you know, I think certainly in the South African market, for a good company, you can still raise the requisite amount of debt that is required. In Africa, I think there's less debt available, but I think that's just a feature of the development of the debt markets. And, you know, it requires private equity companies, I think, to be a bit more focused and a bit smarter about how they structure their investment in African companies.
That brings me to a point I want to make here, Paul, about the cost of executing deals in Africa. If you were to compare executing a deal in South Africa versus a market in East Africa, be it a Rwanda or a Kenya, or one of those that John was just talking about, the data in particular it varies depending on what you look at. For the middle class, for example, I mean, if you look at the Credit Suisse report, there's 18 million in Africa's middle class. If you look at the African Development Bank, there's 300 million. Does this phase you as a GP at all? Because now you've got to go and do a much more intensive due diligence. And surely that must add some cost and complexity to the whole process.
100%, Michael. The way we see Africa and the rest of Africa for us, in particular, as you mentioned, East Africa, is we would never, as a South African GP, go and invest in Africa without having a local partner. I mean, and that's an automatic immediate dilution there. Secondly, you have to do much more work than you would ordinarily do in South Africa, where you understand the market, you understand the drivers, you understand the political landscape. And in Africa, I guess it's a completely different story. And again, the other thing is in South Africa, you probably have a suite of established suppliers and service providers, lawyers, due diligence companies, audit firms, and so on and so forth, and certain commercial experts, which you generally tap into when you're doing a due diligence process, whereas it's not the case in Africa or the rest of Africa. So certainly the cost of doing deals outside of the borders of the country are certainly much higher, which ordinarily puts pressure on your returns, and it certainly require much more growth to compensate for those costs.
Very interesting. We just need to take a quick break from this final Dealmakers panel for the quarter. Well, it's just gone around 10 to 7 on this Thursday, and time for our concluding few minutes of the final panel looking at Dealmakers all this week. And tonight we're looking at private equity. And I've got Erica van der Merwe, the CEO of Savca, around the table with John Bellew, head of private equity at Bowman Gill Fillon, and Paul Mochetsi of Medu Capital, the virtual table, that is, as they're all on the line. Erica, talk to me about fundraising. What are you seeing in terms of new funds raised and the sort of dry powder that John mentioned earlier that is still uninvested?
Well, as you probably know, 2015 was a really busy and a successful year for South African and Southern African fund managers on the fundraising roadshow, where you've seen the efforts of the last 2-3 years coming to fruition. I can't speak to numbers yet. Towards the end of this month, we'll be publishing our industry survey for the 2015 year, and I can give you those details. But as of this year, we saw fund closes by Investec Asset Managers, AgriV very much on the brink of signing and sealing their fundraising. And then on the much smaller end of the scale, the so-called Section 12J companies, those benefiting from the tax incentive put in place by SARS and raising capital for SME and VC-type investments, you're seeing those businesses such as Knife Capital, Grovest, and Sonari doing a great deal of good work in raising funds. And then perhaps if I could also just mention, we've got the announcement by government and Adrian Gore and Brian Joffe of the SME Fund, plans to raise 1.6 billion rand through listed JSE companies for investment into SMEs. And I think this will be a forthcoming wonderful opportunity for the South African private equity industry to show off its skills and its finesse in investing in businesses that have an impact.
Well, that is quite interesting. John, you were chatting to me the last time around about fundraising in particular and whether or not the model, the private equity model, is actually ideally suited to the African market. Your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's still very much a topic under debate. And a lot of the queries that we are getting are around longer-term or permanent capital vehicles, whether that's existing funds looking to, you know, convert into a permanent capital vehicle, or in fact new money being raised that you know, has a longer duration than your typical 10 plus 2. And I think in the private equity space in Africa, it's driven by the fact that a lot of your deal sizes are smaller, a lot of the governance in the companies that you invest into needs work, and often you may have to adopt a buy and build strategy to build an asset of sufficient scale that you can exit after a period of time. And that doesn't always fit comfortably into a typical private equity timeline.
That is quite interesting, Paul. Is that a challenge, a particular challenge that that you encounter if you look north of the Limpopo?
Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, I think what John raises is quite an interesting point, is the permanent nature of the capital which we as private equity investors bring to the table, and the patient nature of it. I mean, you do find that a lot of entrepreneurs that are looking to raise capital, be it growth capital or you know, do an acquisition and go to the banks, and they certainly don't have all the paperwork ready. They certainly don't have the books ready, and certainly generally get declined by the banks and don't get the requisite support that they require for like growth capital, whereas private equity tends to take a longer-term view, and it's very patient and certainly willing to take the time to sort the assets and to generate the value for the investors in the long term.
But as John was saying, you might even have to take an even longer view than the traditional 10 plus 2 because of the sort of background effort and work that goes into sorting out governance structures in a family-owned business, for example, or that buy-and-build strategy. But I want to circle back, Erica, to you, and something that I know is on your agenda as SAVCA, as the sort of lobby group for the private equity industry, and having done such good work in demonstrating the economic value and impact, positive impact that private equity can have, you're now engaging with the large institutions in a much more frank and robust way. That's the pension funds industry. How is that going? How is that progressing?
We published a report called New Frontiers, which looks at the perceptions of and the allocations by Southern African pension funds to private equity. And the report showed, as expected, that there's a very limited awareness and low allocation to private equity, and hence the decision to really galvanize our efforts to speak to South African and Southern African pension funds. So this is enacted through the training that we're offering to pension funds. So we started that program last year. We recently did a similar program in Cape Town, speaking to about a list of about 50 pension fund trustees. And we plan to continue this, so a number of training events and showcasing the industry and research, and as you say, sort of frank face-to-face discussions, and to see where the shortcomings are in our mutual understanding of requirements. So what does the private equity industry need to understand about the pension funds' needs in terms of asset allocation, and moving on from there?
John, in your interaction with both GPs and LPs in the form of pension funds, what do you think is the critical gap, or what will bridge this understanding gap or chasm as we seem to have in the local marketplace? Because the IRR numbers do seem to demonstrate that it's an alternative asset class that should be fully allocated into what is it now, 10% that a pension fund can allocate.
Yeah, I think that, you know, most of the funds that we do see investing are defined benefit funds who aren't so concerned about short-term liquidity, so they can take a long-term view and invest a chunk of their money in private equity. I think the challenge is in the defined contribution environment. And most of the funds these days are defined contribution funds. And I think there's sort of a twofold issue there. I think the one is a basic education issue, which Erica has alluded to. And I think also there's probably a structural issue, because if you're going to have to find a way, I think, to create more liquidity in the private equity funds that you offer. And I think that's a challenge for the managers rather than the pension funds.
Paul, back to you. You're a manager. How do you see the industry tackling this? Is it about creating a bigger secondaries market and increasing liquidity that way? I mean, how are you going to approach the challenge?
No, I think through SAFCA and working with Erica and her team, we certainly continue to lobby for more capital to be allocated to alternative assets, and that includes private equity. I think in our minds, I think John is 100% correct. I mean, liquidity is a key issue. Effectively, the LPs are locked in for a period of 10 plus 2 years. But for us, we say the superior returns should definitely be more attractive than the liquidity that you will have in the short term. And again, we say we're closer to the assets. We understand the businesses better. We are involved in driving the returns, certainly involved in selecting the management teams that drive the underlying assets. And as a result, we should generate better returns, and as a result, should warrant getting more or bigger allocation.
And as Batseat CEO Anne-Marie Dalton was saying to me as well, the ESG issues, environmental social governance issues, can be driven far more effectively through a PE investment than merely taking a minority stake through a listed vehicle. But just quickly, as we wrap this up, Erica, your outlook for 2016? It sounds like boom times are set to continue, perhaps with a few important caveats.
Perhaps not quite as strongly as I'm using the word boom times, but certainly taking over deal making, the private equity houses doing deals as well as realizing assets. So a lot of activity that you're going to see between private equity houses. Also an interesting trend is you're seeing those LPs, so in other words, the institutional investors who typically invest into private equity funds, also doing a great more direct investments, so bypassing the funds and doing their own deals, seeing enormous opportunity and some of those opportunities highlighted for them through their partnerships with the fund managers.
Well, that is quite an interesting trend. John, your thoughts on the year ahead?
Yeah, I think it's going to be better than we thought it was going to be a couple of months ago. I think there's more activity than we expected, and I think it'll be an okay year, but probably not a bumper year.
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, we remain bullish, although the economic environment remains challenging. We still remain positive. We do think that the additional capital, I think Erica mentioned earlier, that has been raised in the country does mean that there's more money chasing too few quality assets, and it does put pressure on asset prices.
Sure. The multiples question we didn't even have time to get to. Unfortunately, it's just gone 7 o'clock. So with that, I've got to say thanks and good night. Erica van der Merwe, CEO of the South African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association. Paul Moketsi, Principal for Investment Execution and Management at Medu Capital. And John Bellew, Head of Private Equity at Bowman Gilfillan. For me, Michael, producer Amor Klakla, and sound engineer Mdu Cheli. Thanks so much for tuning in. Good night.